FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. It's July 4th weekend, and it's Monday, July 3rd. Gold, silver getting slammed. What a great day to drive down prices of something that's being thinly traded or drive them up. Will the madness ever stop? Well, give us your opinion. Email us at kl@kerrylutz.com. We answer all emails eventually. And here with us to discuss the latest is John Rubino of dollarcollapse.com. John, good morning.
Hey, Kerry. Yeah, the guys who manipulate the U.S. markets now love days like July 3rd, right before a big holiday when most people are gone, because this is for them like 4 o'clock in the morning is normally when nobody's trading, nobody's sitting at trading desks anywhere in the world. You can sell a few futures contracts and knock a market like gold down very easily. Well, today they don't have to get up early to do that. They can do it, on their own time. On East Coast time. And that's what's happened. Gold and silver have gotten just whacked this morning for no reason. Stocks are up. You know, there's no economic news out there that would point to either stocks going up or gold going down. It's just that the markets are incredibly thin and, you know, in the futures you can do it. So they're doing it. In reality, the numbers are pointing in the opposite direction. For instance, what I think is probably the most interesting number to come out today is auto sales. They're down dramatically. Car sales have been a big part of the recovery for the last five or so years. And, you know, car loan rates were very cheap. You could borrow money for, I literally borrowed money for 2% to buy my kid a car a couple of years ago. And other people are doing the same thing. They're borrowing very cheaply to buy bigger and bigger cars for longer and longer loan terms. And that's finally starting to come back to bite the industry and by implication, the economy as a whole. You know, if auto sales roll over from record levels here, and for the past 4 or 5 years, people have been taking out 6 or 7 year car mortgages. That means we've got this huge drop off in demand out there because when you borrow for a really long period of time at very low rates to buy something that maybe you couldn't have otherwise afforded, you're taking demand from the future and bringing it into the present. That's what we've been doing for years now in the auto industry. And so we should expect auto sales to fall going forward for the next few years until we bring things back into balance. And meanwhile, all the leases that people took out over the past few years are running off, which means that the supply of used cars is immense and growing, which is going to push down the price of used cars. So basically, the car industry is going to go from a tailwind to a headwind for the economy. And that doesn't leave a whole lot else to grow going forward. You know, where is the booming industry out there that can pull the whole economy along? Because retailing in general is getting whacked. You know, online retailers are eating bricks and mortar retailers, which means, you know, Sears, JCPenney, Macy's, guys like that have to close store after store after store, which means the value of the malls that contain those big box anchor stores is plunging, which is, you know, a real estate and a retail crisis at the same time. So we got all this stuff going on that points to slowing growth. At the same time that the Fed is desperately trying to raise interest rates and getting away with it, you know, we've raised the Fed funds rate by a full percentage point in the last year, and they're intending to do more going forward. So combine all that, and you know, it's not like the typical year six, year seven in a recovery when things start to really bubble and boom and everything. Really, all that's bubbly now is financial asset prices. You know, stocks are way up and bonds are up still. You know, at near record levels, and those things are generating a bit of a wealth effect. You know, if your stock portfolio goes way up, you buy more stuff because you feel richer. You know, and that's happening at the high end of the economic ladder, where the people who own the financial assets to begin with are getting richer and richer, kind of at everyone else's expense, and they're spending a bit more. You know, and that's generating some growth in the luxury end of the market. But that's really it. You know, there's not much going on out there otherwise that you can point to and say, oh, the economy is firing on all cylinders. You know, we've got this growth sector here and this other one over there. It's not like that. So I think it's a fairly safe bet that the numbers coming out in the next year will be disappointing on balance. And the question then becomes, will that affect the financial markets? And who knows, you know?
Yeah, good question. Good question. But I think we're going to have an answer to it shortly. You know, I think we will, but you never know here.
Yeah, you really don't, because so much of the money that's being created by the world's central banks is flowing into the asset markets. And it should also be pointed out that even though the Fed is starting to tighten a bit, it's alone among the world's central banks. Everybody else is still doing full-on QE and buying up most of the debt that their governments create with newly created currency and flooding the market with cash. And because cash is fungible, you know, the Eurozone can create euros, but it doesn't stay within the Eurozone necessarily. Some of that money can flow into U.S. equity markets or Chinese or whatever. And same thing in China. You know, they're creating huge amounts of new currency. Same thing in Japan, you know, and that money just sloshes around the world. So you can't look at the internal policies of any one country and read too much into them, because it's a interconnected global financial system now where things that happen in one country affect other countries. And right now, the overall macro tone of central bank policy is still extremely easy. And until that changes, until more central banks start to tighten or at least scale back the easing, then there's going to be a ton of free cash flowing around in the world and doing who knows what. You know, at the moment, it's still flowing into financial asset prices. I think in the not too distant future, again, this is just my opinion, and I thought this was true for like 3 or 4 years now, but it begins to flow into real assets like well-chosen energy assets and good rental properties and gold and silver, because people start to lose faith in the currencies that are being created on this vast scale right now. That hasn't really happened yet, but at some point, the imbalance becomes so outrageous that it has to happen. And it's just a question of timing.
Yeah, it's all in the timing, John. So do you try to catch the last 10%? What do you do here?
In the stock market?
Yeah.
You know, temperamentally, I'm incapable of doing something like that. Once it doesn't feel right anymore, it's too stressful to be in a market that feels like it should crash at some point. And this one has felt like it should crash for quite some time. But again, all that new currency being created by the world's central banks has to go somewhere. And it's distorting our sense of valuation. In other words, it's making historical valuation metrics seem less and less relevant, which is a characteristic of bubbles. Always and everywhere. You know, when a bubble really reaches its peak, you get a lot of otherwise smart people saying, you know what, this time is different. And these old valuation measures don't matter anymore because this new thing matters more. You know, eyeballs for the dot-coms, or the fact that houses always go up in value in the housing bubble. And now we've got a lot of stuff like that where people are saying, well, you know what, the central banks are just going to continue to create new currency, and governments are increasing their deficits, and we've got infrastructure spending over here and tax cuts there, and actually more QE from the European Central Bank and the Bank of Japan. And those things will always drive asset prices higher. So don't worry about valuation. And that's been a valid point of view for the past few years. At some point, it won't be anymore. But again, it's timing. You know, how out of whack will valuations have to get before they become the dominant factor, when people look at stocks and just say, I don't care how much new cash I have coming in, I'm not buying Google at 200 times earning, you know? Okay. And that time will come. But it's not here yet, obviously, since stocks are up this morning. Mm-hmm. And for people who tend to focus on valuation and want the world to conform to reality, this is a hard time. And peaks of bubbles are always hard times for people who invest rationally instead of emotionally. But when the bubble bursts, rational investors are always validated. And that day will come. You know, I hope it comes soon to get this over with, because we really are doing extreme damage to our kids' futures by taking on more and more debt year after year and bidding up asset prices to unsustainable levels. Because the more this goes on, the bigger the reckoning has to be when the time comes. And that's going to hurt the people who really don't deserve to be hurt, who aren't really participants in this bubble, but are going to be hurt when, you know, their parents get thrown out of work or when they can't afford to live like their parents did, and et cetera, et cetera. You know, it's going to be brutal for regular people when this biggest of all bubbles finally bursts. And it might or might not be brutal for the people who own all these assets, because they're able to hire expertise, you know, people who are able to guide them through this process and maybe get them out in time. You know, you're seeing a lot of smart money shift into real assets already. You know, there are a lot of billionaires shorting the market and buying gold and silver at the moment. They aren't the majority, obviously, but they're starting to. And once that shift really gains some momentum, then, you know, the rich are even going to get richer than they are now. And the poor who buy the stocks that the rich guys are selling are the ones who are going to be hurt. So it's, you know, it's a bad process no matter how you look at it. And something we just need to get through and then eventually do a monetary reset where we create a viable, sustainable monetary system going forward.
Yeah. Well, that's the devil's in the details. I am currently reading a book by, what was his name? The guy who was the head, the governor of the Bank of England, Mervyn King, I think it was, called The End of Alchemy. And he's talking about he's such a Keynesian, and, you know, that now he's talking about we have to get rid of what he calls the alchemy. And the alchemy is basically fractional reserve banking, right? Because it enables banks to make create something out of nothing, right? It really is alchemy when you get down to it. You know, he's got a bunch of ways of doing it. Of course, nothing like discussing gold or silver or anything like that. But he's got his ways of doing it, which is basically that the central banks should become the pawnbroker of last resort. And rather than waiting for the disaster to occur, what he's propounding is let's like, it's kind of like the U.S. military. We had a war in the Middle East. The odds are we're going to have another one. So we stationed all of this equipment in Saudi Arabia. And his thing is, let's get the banks now to post collateral and post reserves with the central bank. And then when it hits the fan again, they won't have to go scrounging. They'll already know what they can get and everything's going to be great. And, you know, I just don't see this happening, of course, but it's actually not too bad an idea, but it's kind of admitting the weakness of the world's central banks, because it's like you're supposed to be there to stop these disasters from happening, and yet now you're basically saying they're going to happen no matter what we do, and let's just prepare for it in advance, right? So
funny how these central bankers sound reasonable after they leave office. You know, Greenspan does the same thing. He's saying, "Oh, buy gold and silver, and we have all these troubles coming because of all this debt."
I love it.
You know, they're the architects of the current system, but they leave office and now they're trying to build a legacy where they can say, "Look, I told you all this stuff was going to happen." You know,
yeah.
Where they don't say, "I did it. I created the crisis. You know, I set fire to your house. Forget about that part, but I helped put it out." Yeah.
Yeah. It's really quite wonderful when you think about it. You know, you gotta love it because, hey, it's like they have to do something, right? They can't just sit around and wait for the next disaster and then have you and me and all of our friends say, "We told you this was going to happen." What he's starting with now is that we've always had disasters. We're always going to have disasters, but let's not let the banks profit from them, you know, kind of with too big to fail. Let's get them to post their collateral and, you know, they'll post their collateral and that'll be that, right? So, it's a fascinating book. I don't think that I quite buy it, just because I don't think it really can be done. But you know, the banks are running the show, and he doesn't get into that. But that's really what it comes down to. And whatever reserves get taken out, whatever collateral they post in advance is going to be collateral they can't hypothecate and funds they can't hypothecate. And, you know, he also is a big one for getting rid of money because he says, what purpose does it serve anymore? You know, what good is it doing us? It's really quite entertaining to listen to him. He doesn't take responsibility for the disaster per se, but he acknowledges complicity, if you will, some degree of complicity. And really, that's what he's really about, I guess, is that there's a degree of complicity. There's blame to go around. But let's not bother with that. Let's understand what happened. And then we'll figure it out from there. It's fascinating. You know, it really is fascinating. So it's worth a read.
It is interesting to see these guys struggling to save a system which is probably unredeemable, you know?
Yeah.
And the fractional reserve banking and fiat currencies are the root of the problem and will have to be gotten rid of at some point. But because that's like saying, you know, we're going to get rid of air or something like that for these bankers, because that to them, that's the environment. That's just the way the world works. But it's clearly based on the amount of debt that we're taking on year after year after year, leading us towards disaster. So at some point, one way or another, those things get replaced by something that works better, which, you know, based on history, the classical gold standard was vastly better than what we've got now. And so we could go back to something like that, or, you know, something involving digital currencies, you know, a cryptocurrency / gold based thing that just bypasses governments, central banks, et cetera, altogether.
He actually talks about cryptos, interestingly enough. And, you know, but he doesn't put any credence because he doesn't think that they're credible enough, I guess would be the right word, that they can actually do the trick.
Well, cryptocurrencies are kind of two things. One is a payment technology,
right?
That is vastly better than what we've got now, quicker and in a lot of ways much more secure than, you know, the bank clearing system that we have now. And that technology can work with fiat currencies via central banks just as easily as, it works over the internet. So that's probably going to happen and change the way banking works. But as for Bitcoin replacing the dollar or something like that, that's a bigger stretch.
It's a bigger stretch, but I don't think, John, that it's necessarily unreasonable. What he doesn't really talk about, he talks about it, how would I say? He talks about it in kind of a offhanded way, but you know, it's the credibility of the system that really is, you know, at stake here. And that's the problem, is he seems to acknowledge that eventually it's going to lose credibility. He talks about other hyperinflations that have taken place both presently in the past, and it's like, it almost reminds me of what Milton Friedman said. If only we had, you know, the statists are always saying, if only we had the right people running stuff, it would all work. And what you and I have learned over the years is the right people don't exist, right? If we had the right people, you know, they would get corrupted anyway, but there is no such thing as the right people, you know? And eventually, the central bank is going to succumb to political pressures, and they're not really independent. They are just into a perception of independence. And eventually, you know, we're going to have disaster occur yet again. And then they'll be coming up with something new to salve the situation, if you will. Right?
Well, yeah, the problem with very powerful government institutions is that you basically just end up with Plato's philosopher king, which is still an idea that appeals to people across the spectrum, you know, where you take a really smart, really good person and give them absolute power and they do the right thing and the system works. But of course, as you said, that only works while the really smart, really good guy remains so and stays in office, right? Because absolute power, as we now know, corrupts the people who have it and attracts the already corrupt. So yeah, you end up, you know, you start with somebody who's great. You know, pick the president that you think is inherently good, FDR, Ronald Reagan, whoever.
Yeah.
And, you know, they accumulated lots of power during the time they were there. And then the guys who came after were not nearly as trustworthy as they were. And it definitely seems like the system is devolving in terms of the guys we're putting in power. And that's as you should expect it to be. The more powerful an institution becomes, the more corrupt it becomes over time, until you end up with, you know, somebody wielding absolute power in their own interests rather than in the interests of society. And we're kind of there around the world right now. And a big part of that is the central banks of the world being handed unlimited printing presses, which is the ultimate financial power, to be able to create money out of thin air. Well, of course you get a bunch of corrupt, incompetent people running the show after one generation of something like that. Mm-hmm. So And we end up with Thomas Jefferson's old saying that the tree of liberty has to be watered periodically with the blood of patriots. You know, you have to have some kind of a changing of the guard by force of some kind, because the guys in power won't give up that power easily. And hopefully this time around, it happens politically after a financial crisis, which shows everyone that the current system doesn't work. You know, we don't have to have a civil war. We could have a political revolution in which the internet leads to a discussion of what money really is and how a government should work, and enough people get educated and just vote for a return to something along the lines of the original Constitution. You know, limited government, free individuals, sound money, and we start over from a sustainable point of view. But the process of getting there is going to be, even if it's not violent, it's going to be incredibly painful for regular people who have put their faith in those fiat currencies. You know, if you've got a dollar savings account, dollar denominated savings account, or a government bond fund or something like that, you will be hurt by the process of fractional reserve banking and fiat currencies breaking down and being replaced by something else, because that's the only way it can happen. You have to grossly, wildly devalue these currencies if you're going to keep them viable. And you have to replace them with something more solid at really favorable prices for the new currency if you're going to shift to something else like a gold-backed cryptocurrency or something like that. Either way, your dollars become a lot less valuable, as do your euros and your yen and your Chinese yuan. You know, those things all lose value as part of this process. So the people who trusted their governments are the ones who are hurt. And the people who were smart enough not to trust the government, you know, which I think includes the 1%.
Yeah,
in the global financial system, for sure.
They trust them to screw up.
They'll make out.
They trust them to screw up, John, right? I mean, isn't that what they do?
Well, you know, no matter what they think, they can hire people who can tell them the truth.
Yeah.
You know, the really smart, sharp finance guys who have spent their lives paying attention to this stuff, who can say, all right, you know, this system doesn't work anymore. It's time to shift you out of those big dollar and euro and yen balances and into something more sustainable, you know, something real that the governments of the world can't just create in unlimited quantities, you know, and the average person doesn't have anyone telling them that.
Yeah.
So they just go along
the opposite, right?
Yeah. They put their paychecks in the bank and hope that it builds up to some big balance that they can use to retire and put their kids through college and stuff. And it's not going to work for a big percentage of those people.
No, it's not. Unfortunate. Really, really unfortunate, though. We've seen this over and over again. There's nothing new here under the sun, as it were, right? Nothing new under the sun.
Human nature doesn't change. The words we use to describe our mistakes do change, but the mistakes are pretty much the same, whether it's the Roman Empire or 17th century France or Weimar Germany or the global financial system today. You know, we're mm-hmm. still following the same impulses that we've followed since the beginning of time and screwing up in more or less the same ways.
Well, we want to get something for nothing. It's human nature, right? It's just the way it is here. It's just human nature. We want to do everything for everyone. It's a awful situation that really there's only temporary fixes for it, John. You know, there are no permanent fixes, because you think you can account for human nature. You think you can change things, but can you really?
No. Not in the long run. I mean, you can put something in place that works for long periods of time, you know, a couple of generations.
Yeah,
again, the classical gold standard was in place more or less for 200 years.
Yeah.
And in that time, there was no inflation. There was steady growth.
Well, there were periods of inflation, but you know when the inflation occurred? When we went off the gold standard for a war or, other reasons, then we had problems. But if we stayed on it, then everything seemed to work out okay. It's just weird.
And there was also falling inequality for most of that time.
Uh-huh.
There were stretches where there were, you know, a few robber barons taking over for a few years. But for most of that time, poor people were lifted up into the middle class at a rate that exceeded the growth in rich people incomes.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, compare that to the last 30 years. And it looks like paradise, because the opposite has been happening ever since we went to pure fiat currencies. The rich have been getting richer at the expense of everybody else. You know, middle class incomes are falling in real terms year after year after year, while the CEOs of corporations and the guys who run hedge funds and the political class have seen their incomes rise dramatically and their share of national wealth rise dramatically. So that's a direct result of the monetary system that we set up. And it can be remedied to an extent by changing monetary systems. And hopefully people get that eventually. You know, if the coming debate leads to enough people figuring this out, then maybe we'll be okay. But I'd say that the odds are wildly against a pain-free transition. You know, it's got to hurt before we come around and see that the alternatives are better than the status quo.
Yeah.
And that we try something new.
Well, only a certain number of people are going to view it that way. The people who are living off of the rest of us, they aren't going to see the benefits of changing the system, are they?
Well, until the status quo is even more painful than change. See, that's the thing. It has to reach a point where business as usual is death, you know, financial death at least. And at that point, then you start looking around thinking, well, okay, I can't keep doing this, so I have to do something else. So let's look at the menu. We can have a dictatorship or we can pull that constitution thing out and read it again and see if there's anything in there we can use, you know, and that'll be an interesting debate when the time comes.
And the time will come.
It's not likely that the forces of freedom will end up winning, but it's still possible at least. So it'll be a debate that'll be worth having.
Yes, I totally agree. And it's a debate we need to have, John. We don't have debates anymore. A book I'm reading, and I'm going to be interviewing this lady today. Her name's Cheryl Atkinson. She was a reporter for CBS for many years and has been a reporter for 30 years. And one of the things she talks about is we just have smears. We no longer have debates. And that's part of the problem, you know? It's definitely part of the problem. So we need to do something about that, I hope. But I don't have the answer, but something needs to be done. So anyways, if you want to find John's work, it's dollarcollapse.com. Sign up for his newsletter. You will get his frequent, and I do mean frequent, updates and newsletters and top 10 videos, things like that. It's well worth it. Go over to our site, financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Check things out. And we'll be back next week, same time. Happy 4th to one and all. It's kind of appropriate. We're talking about Jefferson today, John. And email us, kl@carrylutz.com. Twitter feed's @CarrieLutz. Facebook page is Financial Survival Network. John, enjoy the 4th. We'll talk to you again real soon.
Great, Carrie. Talk to you.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.